This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the Bet Rivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Mike Missanelli Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 30th, and this is podcast number 183. Don't forget Bet Rivers app. You can bet on some live NBA games. The Sixers tonight, as we stand a 4.5 underdog to the New York Knickerbockers at Madison Square Garden. Don't forget about that Bet Rivers first bucket of the game bet. When you go to the app, you find the first bucket of the game, and you get a profit boost up to 100%, depending on what your loyalty points say. And you'll at least get a 20% profit boost on who scores the first basket of the game. For my money, it's going to be the Sixers, actually, score the first bucket of the game. And I'm going to go Tobias Harris. How about that? I'm sure you get some good odds on that. All right. In any event, the Sixers, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have to tell you, are on the brink of their season. I do not think they will win tonight. Normally, I would say if a team showed me a particular fight to come back in a series that they could go up to the Garden and win, I just don't see the role players who were totally overwhelmed in game one and two in the Garden. I don't know where they're going to get the personality all of a sudden erupt and be the foxhole players that they should be. So in either event, if they somehow win, this is where I'm probably a fraud, because I go, are we going to do this again to the fans where they make a run, like just against Boston, they'll win in the Garden, they'll come back here, they'll win, and they'll take it to a game seven and lose at the Garden game seven. I guess a game seven would be exciting for everybody, but the heartbreak of going through that again, this is why I look at this like, you know, just it's a mercy killing at this point. And I feel terrible about that, but I'm so bewildered about what I've seen so far with the Sixers. So here's the news of the day. And of course, we're going to talk to Tim Legler about this in a little bit. We get Tim Legler on as our guest today to analyze what's going on with the Sixers. You want to absolutely pay attention to what Tim has to say. And also, we'll talk about the NFL draft a little bit and how the Eagles did with draft expert Matt Miller. So a lot of good guests coming. But let's really look at this series and what it means for the Sixers. And you know, the major question is the Embiid question. And the news of the day is that Embiid missed shoot-around this morning, because of a migraine. And Kelly Oubre missed the shoot-around because he was feeling ill. I don't know what that means, other than if you have the sense of urgency that you have to win a game, I don't think you bail out of a shoot-around because of a malady like that. So I don't know what that says about what fight they have left. But in any event, it all comes down to the analyzing Joel Embiid, the Joel Embiid question. And you know, if they lose tonight, and we've already seen much reaction on social media about how they have to cut ties with him now, and you have to trade him while you can still get something for him. And my answer to that is, no, I'm not down with that, because you can't better your team by get rid of Embiid. And it's a fantasy to think you can. You're not – like, what do you have if you trade Embiid? You're going to get players good enough to make up for a guy who's an MVP-level player? No. So what you're saying is, if you want to – you've got to separate your anger from what's reasonable. And what's reasonable is, you still got, as long as he's here, you still got to keep building around him, because the anger side of that is, get rid of him does you no good. And you'll eventually find that out and you'll slap yourself in the head. So he's going to be back for my money, and Maxey's going to be back. So you got the two guys. That's all is going to be back, by the way. So you have now the freedom to completely rebuild your roster. It's not a great free agent class, so I don't know what more he's going to do. We'll talk a little bit later about the possibility of LeBron James coming here. But let's look at what Embiid is here. And again, we're talking about nationally, people have killed me. I was on NBA radio, and those guys are killing me because they think I'm always making excuses for Embiid. I struggle with this because there have been times where he hasn't had the injury that has affected him, and he hasn't delivered in the playoffs to get the Sixers past the second round. And that's all that people measure it on. This year, I think he does have a legitimate excuse, but still people aren't going to look at that excuse anymore. He's run out of excuses. So I don't know where the fans are. I mean, you're talking about a guy that when he would go to the foul line in the past couple of years, the crowd would chant MVP, MVP. Now if they lose in the first round, that dynamic completely changes. And now you got the majority of Sixer fans saying, all right, it's time to cut ties and rebuild. I don't know what to say. And I don't know what to say about Embiid, because to me, he's sort of an enigma. On one hand, I go, how could possibly a guy play 45 minutes in an NBA playoff game coming off a meniscus surgery? And I've had a meniscus surgery, so I know what the recovery is like. And not to say anything about the cardiovascular shape, where it's obviously he's gassed in the fourth quarter. So I go, I can't overjudge him because of that. But by the same token, I look at the fourth quarter of the last game and I go, is he willing to pay the price even though he's gassed by getting into the spot, the only spot where the Knicks can't stop him, which is in that elbow situation, which is in the lane, which is where they have to double or they have to single him up. And they had Hartenstein out of the game, so they were singling him up with a smaller player. And in the fourth quarter, they didn't run any offense that way. Now, is that Embiid not willing to go there, or is it Nick Nurse? Because if I'm Nick Nurse, I make sure that happens. I got timeouts in my pocket. I go, okay, fellas, here's what we need to do here on our next offensive set. Joe, I need you to get there to the elbow. Kyle, I need you to orchestrate it where he gets into the elbow. And I didn't see any of that. So I go, what is Nick Nurse doing? He's got 100 assistants. I've just been befuddled by the same thing that everybody else is befuddled. This team is maddening to follow year after year. So tonight, I'm just resigned to the fact that they should lose it and we get it over with and we turn our attention to the Phillies and the upcoming Eagle season. But there is an intriguing little offseason situation. Now, the Lakers went out last night. And who knows what's going to happen with LeBron James and Anthony Davis? That, you know, he may be looking at that situation and say, you know what, we're not going to win here. So maybe I could go for another challenge. And maybe the next challenge involves playing with my kid, which he is obsessed with doing. So here come the Sixers. Daryl Morey is a star hunter. Would he actually entertain the thought of bringing LeBron James here in some kind of a trade? And how would you feel about that? That is the million-dollar question as we go into the offseason. Because what else are you going to do? What else can you possibly do to bring enough good players, difference-making players to this team, even though you've got a ton of cap space? You need to make a trade for a big-name player. You're not going to get that through free agency. So that's the major question for the Philadelphia 76ers. Again, I predict that they will lose tonight. If you're watching this podcast on Wednesday and they've won, don't at me. All right. I'm talking about how I feel right at this particular moment as we're doing this podcast. It's 11:28 a.m.
It's the Mike Missanelli podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right. It's the Mike Missanelli podcast. We're talking Sixers, and let's bring in an expert on the NBA, an expert on the Sixers, because he is amongst us in the area. He, of course, is the great Tim Legler from ESPN and many other outlets. Timmy, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling great. Listen, you know, I got a lot of investment emotionally in Philadelphia basketball as a whole, but I'm not, you know, necessarily losing sleep like over these games the way a lot of people are. So I'm doing great, Mike. I don't know if I can say the same right now about Sixers fans. I understand the frustration.
No, Sixers fans aren't doing great. So let's talk about the news of the day, which probably, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. I think both guys will play, but yeah. It is an interesting mindset here. Joel Embiid missed a shoot around because of a migraine. It's always something. And Kelly Oubre is feeling ill, and he missed a shoot. So this is the most important game. Your season's on the brink. What does that say to you as a former NBA player?
And you know, it's not the kind of mindset that you want to portray, right? You don't want to portray something where, you know, listen, there's already limitations with Embiid. We get it. And now it's like the vibe going in, right? It's 10:30 in the morning. It's like you said, it's a war. This series has been a war. You're expecting a war tonight. By the way, the margins between these teams is razor thin. You're talking about a handful of possessions in these games that make the difference. And that'll be the case again tonight, assuming that, you know, Embiid's out there and Oubre plays. Like, they need everybody. But assuming that happens, you're talking about literally defining moments in these games that you can point to, handful of possessions. And so to hear that, like, there's some things going on where guys aren't participating this morning, you're hoping they're going to be there for tip off. That's not exactly that, you know, grab the flag like Braveheart, run over the hill. We're going to go to battle and get this thing back to Philly. That's not exactly what that sounds like.
It's so disheartening because this happens every year. Now Yeah. It's going to be, I believe, it's a foregone conclusion. It's a first round playoff elimination. You said something really interesting at the start of these playoffs that with Embiid in the shape he's in, that if I were the Knicks, I'd be salivating to play the 76ers the way Embiid is right now. But he's such a ruse and I don't understand the guy at all, because he's capable of scoring 50 and then the next night he'll disappear in the fourth quarter. Can you make sense of Joel Embiid to me?
I can't. I just to make sure that I saw it properly, because I watched the game Sunday at home. I wasn't working that day, so I was kind of just chilling, you know, watching the game as a fan and wasn't taking 80 pages of notes like I normally do. I was just watching the game, but I knew what I was seeing in the fourth quarter. But I wanted to make sure I saw it. So I went back today, and I watched the entire fourth quarter again, possession after possession, because I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something. It was incomprehensible what their offense looked like down the stretch of that game. It's the most maddening thing in the world, if I'm a Sixers fan, to watch what I watched. Okay, he's limited. We get it. The guy had 50 the game before. He had 27 points through three quarters. He's on his way to a 35-40 point game again. And yet, look at the last 6 minutes of the game, what they were running and where he was located, and his lack of catching the ball in his sweet spot, the lack of putting any pressure on defenses, not trying to draw fouls. The couple times he did touch the ball, he was 18, 20 feet from the basket in a weird post area where he knows he's going to get double teamed or he's going to have to shoot a weak fadeaway shot. His wheelhouse is elbows and that area between the foul line and the top of the key. And when he catches the ball there and they get flat and they let him go, he is literally unstoppable. He single-handedly put Isaiah Hartenstein out of the game from that exact spot on the floor. And now here we are, one possession game, 6 minutes to go. Nah, we're not going to do that at all. And I'm sitting there going, and I said the same thing sometimes about Doc Rivers. And I'd say, with the Simmons issues and the Harden issues, and I'd go, I'd crush Simmons, I'd crush Harden, Doc got beat up. But then I'd say, well, what would that be like to be a coach and have a guy that you watch play all year a certain way, now in the moment want no part of playing like that? I don't know how you overcome that as a coach. So I don't know if that had something to do with Embiid, the vibe he was putting off. Nick Nurse was content with him running to the left corner and standing there while Oubre takes a pull-up three off a ball screen, like at a critical time. I don't know, Mike. I don't have the answers to that. I just know that that was horrific execution in the last 6 minutes of that game. There's no other way to describe it.
And this is what, you know, I did a post-game podcast, and I focused exactly on that point. So who is it at this point? Is it Nurse not designing where that ball should go in crucial possessions, or is it Embiid just not willing to do it? There's a really weird disconnect here, because if I'm trying to run stuff, like you just pointed out, I would think Nick Nurse would know the same thing. So why doesn't it get done? Is it Embiid or is it Nurse?
Okay, it's a little bit of everybody. And I'm going to use a comparison here. I know they're a different team and they're the world champs. But look, they've got a guard big man tandem in Denver. Okay? So do the Sixers. And I think both teams, I think, have really, really sharp coaches. A lot of respect for both guys. Okay. So here's who it is. Part of it's Nurse. I could walk in there right now to their shoot-around. And I would need five minutes to design something to ensure that Joel Embiid catches the ball at the elbow. It doesn't take much. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to do the right thing out of it, or he's going to score or he's not going to, he's going to read the double team right or whatever. That doesn't mean that. But I know he's going to touch the ball there because I'm going to ensure it. I'm going to guarantee it because you can't prevent a guy that big and strong with a wingspan like that from catching the ball anywhere on the floor. You can't prevent that. You can't prevent Jokic from catching the ball anywhere he wants. He's too big. He's too heavy. His hands are too good. So it doesn't matter what you run, a simple down screen from the elbow down the lane from one of your guards to bring Embiid up to the foul line and put his arm out and let Kyle Lowry deliver the basketball. That's all it takes. And then get flat and let him go. They didn't do it one time in the last 6 minutes of the game. I don't understand. So part of it is absolutely Nick Nurse. That part I just described. But look, if part of it is Joel Embiid putting off the vibe that I'm dragging around and I'm in pain and I'm gassed and I'm wincing and I don't, then that's not eliciting a lot of confidence in your coach to run that action. So that part is on Embiid. And then there's the last part, your guard leadership. Look at Denver. It's twice in the same series against the Lakers. They didn't call a timeout with the game on the line. Why? Because they inherently trust Jamal Murray. And look, he made shots in both cases, but it didn't necessarily mean, Mike, that he was gonna. It could have been something else that he got, but they trusted him to organize people where they needed to be. And last night, he looks at KCP. He says, get out. Go to the other side of the floor. He directs traffic, and now we run two-man action and reads it. If they double me, it's going back to Jokic for a shot. If they don't, I'll shoot a pull-up jumper. They don't have that kind of guard leadership. I know Lowry's been around the league forever. He doesn't have that place in the league anymore. He's not that kind of player. Maxey's got the ball more. That is not in his personality to direct traffic and make sure in this moment, Joel, right here, get the ball and point. That's not Maxey's personality. So and to answer your question, Mike, it's a little bit of all of it. And all of it adds up to inexcusable. You cannot go down the way they did in a game where you're fighting to stay in the series the way they operated the last 6 minutes of that game. It's a disgrace.
Let's look further into Embiid. It's proved, except for one game, he has been totally gassed in fourth quarters. Yep. And you predicted that. Coming off an injury, it's not that easy to get your wind back. It's not that easy to recover from a meniscus surgery. So knowing that, if you're the head coach, and I don't want to feel like I'm picking on the head coach here. Yeah. And I get what their plus minus is when he's off the floor.
Right.
But though, isn't it a priority to have him in the fourth quarter that you just have to bite the bullet with either Reed or Bamba to eat up maybe 15 minutes worth of that?
100%. And I think it should have been that last 3 minutes of the third quarter. So if you basically take him out right before the last mandatory timeout of the third, okay? That timeout, now I'm going to go in real time. That timeout in real time actually is going to be about 5 minutes before they start playing again if you take him out then. Then you got 3 minutes of playing time. That's probably another 10 minutes of real time. And then you've got a quarter break. That's another 3 to 5 minutes of – you're talking about buying him 15 to minimum 15 minutes of rest going into the fourth quarter, and then you play him the whole fourth if you have to. I think what happened, Nick Nurse got spooked by what happened in the first half when he was off the floor because their offense just stalls. And he's worried. But here's the thing. Here's why if I'm on his staff, I'm saying to him, this isn't the Pacers or the Celtics, a team that could potentially get 12 points in 3 minutes. The Knicks aren't running away from you. That's not who they are offensively, man. They got Brunson, who's a star offensive player. Then they got a bunch of dudes that fluctuate night to night. This isn't some juggernaut offensively. So you can buy 3 minutes, man. Even if you get outscored, 6-2, whatever. You're in the game, and Embiid got the desperate rest that he needed to get to play the whole fourth quarter. To play him the entire second half, the way he looks, the way he feels, and the amount of time he missed, no, that was going to set you up for a guy that was not going to be able to deliver the goods late because he just didn't have the stamina, didn't have the desire, whatever, wasn't feeling it. But as a result, the Sixers can't run their offense because that's all they know is that guy being dominant. And when he's not, you got to go to plan B on the fly. And that's a hard thing to figure out.
I totally agree with you. But let's even take this further now, because there's not going to be an excuse that he came off an injury. What most people are going to look at is he can't get it done. He just can't get it done in the playoffs. So therefore, and you know this town, they're going to get eliminated in the first round, and they're going to call for it. Okay, it's enough of Embiid. Now you got to change it up, which I don't think helps you at all, but that's going to be the mindset. But you really have to consider the question. They haven't been able to put a good enough team around him, or he's just not it.
All right. So I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, listen, you can't deny the fact. I don't think any of these injuries that he has sustained over the years at this time of the year have been something where you look at him and go, oh, man, are you serious right now? You can't go with that. No, I mean, the guy had an orbital fracture. He had torn meniscus. Like, he's got serious basketball injuries that are going to prevent you from being your best. It seems like it happens every year. I don't know if that's the rest of his career. He's just going to be cursed in that way. I don't know. That has definitely played a part. The other part you're talking about not being able to get it done, right? Whether you're healthy or not, you got to get it done because they're counting on you to get it done. I think there's absolutely a component to that. Here's why I felt different about this team, Mike. And look, when he was rolling, and even when he came back, I had to see him. When I saw how he looked when he came back after that long layoff, I said this team could go to the conference finals because the way the East was laying out, Giannis banged up, Bucks not struggling, the Knicks, you know, missing an all-star. Look at the rest of the Eastern Conference. You're going, wait, they can make a run here if they stay out of the Celtics bracket, which they did. Then the reason I thought it more than anything else, Mike, I think he's finally got the right co-star. I think he's got a guy next to him that's not fazed by pressure, that's not going to like run from the light the way that Simmons did, the way that Harden did. And I thought, man, this is exactly the guy Embiid needs because he makes him feel more confident because he's going to show up. Now, it doesn't mean Maxey's going to play great every night. He's going to play the same way. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to be downhill. He's going to take his chances. He's not going to look like he's terrified of the moment. That's what Embiid needed. So I felt really good about their chances. I liked even some of the guys they added, the pieces that they added, Batum and Oubre and Lowry, and even Buddy Hield, which has really shocked me, like what he's looked like in this series. I thought he'd be a lot better for them. So I had a lot of confidence in it that it wasn't all about Embiid. I liked Maxey factor, the guys they put around him, and Embiid was going to be good enough. And then here we go again with the injuries and guys playing really small in the supporting cast. And we're right back in the same boat against a team, by the way, that's very beatable. Come on. This Knicks team is beatable, man.
They don't score. One guy scores.
One guy destroys you possession after possession. And then they got a bunch of dudes that play incredibly hard. I mean, their guards and wings rebound and offensive rebound better than any team in the league. And that's a big component in playoff basketball, extra shots, extra possessions. But for the most part, it's like, you don't know where it's coming from. Is it DiVincenzo? Is it Hart? Is it Ananobi? Is it McBride? Hartenstein? Like, who are these guys? I'm not saying they're not good players, but they're not consistent 20-point co-stars. None of those guys are. So this is a winnable series. Loose balls, rebounds, execute down the stretch, like and do something different with Brunson. Obviously, that's got to happen tonight. But they're so close, but they fail in big spots every single year. And the other night was a big, big spot, and they couldn't have been smaller in the last 6 minutes of that game.
Tim, let me ask you this question about Joel Embiid. We're talking with Tim Legler, ESPN, former NBA player, three-point shooter, shooting champion. Tremendous credentials to analyze. I look at Embiid's body, and I go, okay. I remember when he came out of Kansas. He had a Bam Adebayo body when he came out of Kansas. Now, I know bodies change, and he's grown into this monster of 300 pounds. But is it possible that he could lose 30 and get his body a little more spry, which would help in various ways? I mean, he's a dominant player now, but it would also help in various ways as far as the weight on your pins and all this kind of thing. Is that possible or not? Is his body just gotten to that point where it has to be like that?
I don't know that to that extent that you're talking about, but I think they're listening. You go to any orthopedic guy knows what he's talking about. They're going to say, you got to take pressure off those joints. And the best way to do that is to lose weight and get leaner. And I don't know that it's going to affect his game that dramatically because he's so naturally strong and functionally strong. It won't even matter if he loses weight in terms of how he plays. I just don't know if you got that kind of commitment in the offseason to do it. The other thing that is going to help him is increasing and improving like your overall conditioning, even if you're not dropping weight. And I don't know that Embiid is going to do that. Like, I mean, I heard some of the offseason workouts, what they look like for Giannis. That's not what Embiid's doing. We all know that. That's the kind of thing that it would take to push himself to peak physical condition so he's able to avoid some of these fluky injuries because I think that's part of it. And he's able to be his best when they need you to be your best. because the great regular seasons ultimately are going to be something that's great. He's got an MVP. We're going to remember it. What a talent and all those things. The most dominant offensive player in the Eastern Conference. We're going to remember all that stuff when he's done playing. But the first thing people are going to bring up is the playoff failures and why, and get into that year after year. And I think these are the kinds of things he's got to wonder, you know, ask himself, how bad do I want to do this? And the best way to answer that is in the off season, not during the season. What do you look like day one at camp to let everybody know, look at you and go, wow, Luka Doncic did it. Luka Doncic dropped 25 pounds. He added tone and muscle and functional strength to his game. And now he's unstoppable. And that was a big question about him, but he did it because he wants to go to that next plateau. And I think Embiid, that's a big challenge for him, man. And I don't know what he does in the offseason. I can't say he does or doesn't.
Yeah.
But is he a grinder like the guys I'm talking about? I don't know, man.
And, no, that's and, a now, and now he's 30 years old, which might even make it less inclined to do that. So here's the final question for you, Timmy.
Yeah.
Where are they right now? They're not going to move him. Maury loves stars, so they're not going to move him. So I look at the Sixers, and they got all this cap space, and they got two foundation players in Maxey and Embiid. Where do they go from here? I got to be honest with you. I don't think Maury has done enough to build this team, or at least what I expected he was going
to
do.
Well, look, I think relative to the rest of the conference, man, they're in the mix other than Boston. Look what Boston did. Look what Boston pulled off. You already had Tatum and Brown. You picked up Derek White last year, who is one of the biggest X factors in the league, and he had 38 points last night in the playoff game. Then you lose your two best defensive players, Robert Williams and Marcus Smart, and you replace them with two guys equally as good defensively and way better offensively in Drew Holiday and Porzingis. I mean, what they pulled off has separated them 14 games so by the rest of the Eastern Conference. But all the other teams, I think they have the roster that's in the mix. But the one thing I can tell you right now, they absolutely have to address. You need a lead guard, someone that's got some size, that can run ball screen and make plays for people and put pressure on defenses, getting into the paint and distributing and taking pressure off of Tyrese Maxey, who is a raw, natural scorer. He is not a playmaker at the guard position. He's not. That's not his strength. I don't think it ever will be, and I don't think you should ask him to be. He can get better at it marginally. He is a scorer, an attacker. That's what Embiid is. You need somebody to set the table for them and to make the game easier for your role players. And that's to me, number one priority for this team.
But who is that guy?
That's a
who
good
question. Who could that guy possibly be?
That's a good question. I don't want to throw a name off the top of my head. Honestly, Mike, that's the kind of thing right now in the middle of the playoffs I'm not looking at until I get deeper into the playoffs and I start to look at who could be available through free agency, what teams are looking to move on from somebody because they had a bad playoff run or a bad regular season. That stuff kind of takes shape after the season as you get into late June. So it's hard to know right now, but they have to do that. Kyle Lowry's got a lot of guts and heart, man, and all that. I get it. Kyle Lowry's 6 feet tall. He's 38 or whatever he is. That's not the answer at that spot. You need somebody that can help take the ball handling responsibilities off of Tyrese Maxey to go let him be who he is naturally. That, to me, is one of your first orders of business.
Let me throw a curveball at you because I heard it being discussed on Sirius XM NBA radio. Would Maury chase LeBron in this kind of a situation?
I've heard that too. And here's why, like, I don't think that's an insane proposition to think about trying to get him. The window that you have with Joel Embiid was already tight. It's significantly more narrow because of the injuries, and now he's north of 30. And it's almost like you expect now him to miss large chunks of time, and will he be right when the playoffs come? So as crazy as that might sound, oh, let's go get LeBron. He's going to be 40 next season. Guy's obviously still playing at a really high level. That's not only your lead guard, that's one of the most dominant players in the league that controls the game, unlike only two people that control the game more than LeBron still are Luka and Jokic. And then it's LeBron. Yes, that makes sense because you want to try to win or at least give me a conference final.
And the Sixers make it all cozy because they either signed Bronny as a free agent or maybe they drafted him and said, make a promise that, you know, that take your money out of the portal and we'll draft you in the second round, whatever it is. And they lay the foundation for that to happen before anybody else.
Listen, if I recall correctly, the Sixers back in the day kept Brian Oliver around for like 3 years because it was Barkley's boy. So listen, you do what you got to do, man. You good if you want you sign LeBron's wife to a 10-day if that's what it takes. You do what you got to do, man. You get him in a uniform, whatever it takes, because again, you got to try to do everything.
They're gonna be playing on the Olympic team here, right? So they get all bonded up, right?
Let me ask you a question though. I'm curious because I got asked this question last night. I did SVP last night. Stanford Steve asked me this question. There's no way Embiid plays in the Olympics, right? And I'm going, that's actually an interesting question. How do you feel about that as a Philadelphian? And how do you think Philadelphia fans would feel about Joel Embiid playing in the Olympics based on the way his season's ending?
Well, I don't think that at first blush, they don't like it. Obviously, they resent it. However, what you mentioned about getting in shape, if he's got that kind of a regimen, he almost has to stay in shape that way. So I'm looking at it that way instead of, you know, the bitter way. How dare him to do that?
Can I throw my two cents in here as just a from a player's perspective on this? Because Kawhi's in the same boat. Same exact boat. Kawhi is now pretty much, I think he's down for the series. Who knows, maybe the whole postseason. And he's on the Olympic team. And I think that was more of a career achievement invite for him because there was younger players, that Brunson. Like, there were other guys you could have gone with. So here's my thing as a player. Fans, don't be too hard on the players, man. Like, it to me is one of the greatest honors that could ever be bestowed upon me as a player if I was asked to participate in something like that. So don't be too hard on the players. And the organizations, same. These guys only get to do this for 15 years, man. You know, 20 if you're LeBron, but 15 years, most of them. And it's over, man. You're in your 30s, and the thing that you were obsessed with your entire life is over. You'll never play another meaningful basketball game. And this, what could be a greater honor than that? So I get why guys want to do it. But man, oh man, is it tough circumstances to finish your year the way Embiid looks like he's going to, the way Kawhi is, and then those guys go play in Paris. Now, look, it's not exactly the most taxing thing. They're going to play 12, 15 minutes. I get it. It's cushy work. They will be tested, but still, they're not going to be like overly worked over there. The practices
are hard. No, but they have to go through practices.
No, you do. And, you got to go to
Vegas. They have a regimen that they have to go through the whole 100% bit.
100% right. LeBron referred to it last night as, I got to get ready for training camp in 2 months. He's right. That's what it is. You go through 2 weeks, 3 weeks of workouts. You're playing against, they put elite teams together to scrimmage against. So you're at that time of year, normally, you're on vacation. Like, you're resting your body, and then you're getting ready for, like, August to start ramping it up a little bit. Hey, some guys I know, they don't even ramp it up till they get to the facility for the first day of camp. They did nothing in the offseason. Most guys, though, they start working in August. July, you're usually rested. August, early August. So it is going to be a different summer for him, which could ultimately prove beneficial.
But you know, Philly fans, first round exit, they're going to resent the hell out of it. If he got them to the finals, they would shower him with roses and escort him to training camp. That's the way it rolls.
They would be lining the Champs-Élysées, throwing rose petals.
Exactly. There'd be road trips over there with Embiid.
You'd have a bunch of French people sitting in their cafes, sipping their coffee and hearing an EAGLES chant. Up and down the Champs-Élysées.
Exactly.
You wouldn't be able to get into the Louvre.
Look how big he is.
You wouldn't be able to get into the Louvre because all the Eagles fans blocking the entrance. Are you kidding me? What that would look like? They would take over Paris, man. It would be a Netflix documentary.
The Parisian breakfast would be, you got any scrapple?
No question. That's an 8-episode Netflix documentary, man. If that were to play out that way, there's no doubt about it.
Oh, that's awesome. Timmy, always a pleasure, man. We got to do this more often. And we'll look forward to watching your analysis of the NBA playoffs without the Sixers.
You got it, man.
I think it ends tonight. What's the difference? Even if it doesn't end tonight, you think they're going to take this to 7 games, win 2 straight games, and they're going to win game 7 in the Garden? Like, it's ridiculous to think that could happen.
Hey, listen. Here's how I look at it if I'm them. Like I said, these games are wars. It's a handful of things. It's good. Now, look, don't get me wrong. Embiid shows up. He's not feeling right because of the migraine. Oubre's not there, limited. They could get smoked tonight for the first time. If that's the approach, that we're a wounded animal coming into this environment, it could. If they have the get-in-the-trenches mentality, hey, man, who knows? Maybe it's a one-possession game, 6 minutes to go. They somehow find a way. You get it back to Philly for another game. Either way, I picked the Sixers back in the beginning when I saw Embiid to go to conference finals. But then when I saw him against the Heat in the play-in game, I said, nope, Knicks win this series in 6 or 7. Knicks are going to win the series one way or another. You're right. But maybe Philly can give their team, their fans, one more home game.
Yeah, I just don't see this as a trench team. I'm sorry at this point. All right, man. Listen, thanks a lot for being on. And we'll talk to you, buddy. Thanks.
You got it, man. Talk to you soon.
It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
Oh, thanks to Tim Legler. Always good to talk to my boy Timmy, who I actually covered as a college player when he was back playing with the LaSalle Explorers. And I remember a memorable game that they played Temple at McGonagall Hall. There's always these games that flash back in my mind. It was just Lionel Simmons and Tim Legler and Richie Tarr. They had Randy Woods, guys like that. So let's talk about the NFL draft. And you know, we touched on it when they made the picks. We haven't had a chance to follow up with everybody on the rest of the draft. So let's look through it here. By the way, the Eagles are ranked pretty high as far as the pundits that rank these drafts. You can never really tell. But, you know, the names on paper get the pundits to evaluate who had a good draft and who did not. So the Chicago Bears obviously get number one because they got two starting players in their first 9 picks. And then they reasoned the Steelers had a pretty good draft. They got a couple starters out of it. And the Detroit Lions were ranked 3rd by The Athletic. And they got Terrion Arnold with their number one pick, who the Eagles were interested in. And then the Eagles were 4th. So the Eagles got Quinnen Mitchell, which I think was a home run to sit there at 22 and get him, the cornerback from Toledo. I think he's the best corner in the draft. Cooper DeJean from Iowa. We'll see what they do with him. I have a feeling he'll be a slot corner early on and then probably transition to safety later in his career. The strangest pick of the draft, but a pick that a lot of people think has promise, Jalix Hunt from Houston Christian, started at Cornell, I believe. Edge rusher, still in development. They've got time to develop him. Will Shipley, tough-nosed running back from Clemson. And then they got Aeneas Smith, the wide receiver of Texas A&M, very undersized, but a dynamic return guy and maybe a threat as a slot. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., the linebacker from Clemson. Everybody, of course, is all about that pick. We'll see if he can play a linebacker in today's NFL where you have to cover. Trevor Keegan, I have to laugh because I used to go, well, they got Trevor Keegan in the 5th round. That's a home run. Who knows after the 4th round how these guys are. But anyway, Trevor Keegan is a guard from Michigan. You can't go wrong taking an offensive lineman from Michigan. They usually pan out. Johnny Wilson, the big wide receiver from Florida State, also in the 6th round, 6'6 guy. He's got some downside to him, not real fast. And then Dylan McMahon, a center from NC State. So that was your draft. Like I said, I have no idea how good this draft is going to be until I see him. And I always have to laugh at the people that look at drafts in the back end, you know, the later rounds, and go, wow, they got a really good player there. You know, the NFL evaluation is a little different from how they play in college. So also it remains to be seen. But here's an interesting dynamic that I heard somebody say, I forget, some national football analyst pundit say that the reason why Howie Roseman gets a lot of acclaim is that he drafts players that all these draft experts have on their board. Like, oh, see, I read about that guy, so Howie must have gotten a good pick. Like I say, I have no idea, but most of the experts say the Eagles did pretty well in that draft.
It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All righty, then. Let's hear more about the NFL draft as far as how the Eagles did with our guest today. A draft expert from way back. He's been analyzing the NFL draft for a long time now. Most recently, of course, with ESPN, ESPN.com. Before that, Bleacher Report. He, of course, is the great Matt Miller. Hello, Matt. Thanks for joining the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys.
All right, let's get right into it because you're in the business of evaluating how teams do in the draft. And, you know, most of the people that I've read or listened to say that the Eagles had a really good draft. In fact, one of the top 5 drafts of anybody in this particular draft. Do you agree?
I do, yeah. And I think, you know, the Eagles are one of those teams every year where we praise what they do in the draft because they select a lot of players that we know. Howie Roseman drafts productive players from big colleges, Georgia, Iowa. You know, it's like he has a prototype. But then this year, He goes and gets a corner from Toledo. It's like the anti Howie Roseman, but Quinion Mitchell is a hell of a player. I thought it was a great pick. I think with Philly, we all praise the draft because they do what we think they should do. You know, they address their needs. They draft, you know, and there's a lot of best player available at a position of need, even like Jalen Carter last year, you know, was that kind of pick. So I think a lot of the like armchair general managers like myself love what Philly does because of that. But there's some high risk as well. You know, guys like Jalix Hunt in the third round. I thought that was a little bit too early for Jalix Hunt. However, he fits the type of Josh Sweat and Nolan Smith. And so if it works out, no one's going to be like, you know, dang, you drafted this guy 50 spots earlier than, you know, Mel Kiper Jr. and all the draftniks thought you should. If it works out, we're all going to praise the, you know, kind of the fortitude to go get a developmental player.
Let's talk about the first two, because I agree. I you know, he doesn't come from a big school, and that was irrelevant to me because this guy checks a lot of boxes. And the only thing he doesn't check, you know, against big time competition every day, but he did play against Ohio State. We talk about Quinion Mitchell. He clearly had the most goods of any cornerback. So I guess my question to you is, did they take a chance here, or are they so in tune with the draft that they just knew that he was going to be there when they selected? Because I really think that they were going to even move up when he got to be like in the 17-18 area, they would trade into that spot. But they read it correctly.
Yeah. I think it's that they knew there would be a corner there was the thing, right? Like, you maybe don't know that Mitchell will be there, but you like enough corners to where you could say, okay, Mitchell's gone, we like Terrion Arnold. If Terrion Arnold's gone, we like Mitchell. If they're both gone somehow, we really like Cooper DeJean, who they ended up getting to pick number 40. So it's a little bit of calculation, and that's why as a front office, it's super, super important to have connections and to have sources. And people will ask me, like, well, why would an NFL team tell you anything? Well, because I can tell them what I'm hearing, you know, other teams of like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I'll get a call from a college scouting director and be like, hey, where do you hear the corners are coming off the board? And you'll say, I might not be able to say, hey, I hear that, you know, Philly's going to draft one and Detroit's going to draft one. But I can say, you know, I've kind of heard the range on this player is probably in the early 20s. That helps them narrow down where that expected range is going to be. And so it is calculated. It absolutely is. But it's also the knowledge of, we can sit at 22, and especially after you watch the board, because you know there's only X amount of teams that are going to take a corner in the first round. So you can watch the board and say, okay, at this spot, we know this team's not taking a corner. I think once the Colts didn't take a corner at 15, you felt like, dang, there's one of these dudes is going to drop to us. And especially so when Indy didn't and when Jacksonville didn't, like the runway was clear for the top corner to fall to Philly. So I think they played it beautifully, honestly.
So lo and behold, Cooper DeJean is there for them, and they take him as well. So I want you to look deeply into his soul. Where does he fit in the NFL? Because there's the obvious. In fact, it was the first question asked to the kid about being a white cornerback here with the Philadelphia media. So where does he fit in right now in the NFL, in your opinion?
I think he's an outside corner who can play on the inside and who can play safety. I think, you know, a lot of the pre-draft evaluation for him and for everyone is about traits. And you try to say, okay, where would these traits best fit into the NFL? What is the potential of all these traits? And now that we know where Cooper's going to be playing, we know, okay, it's a Vic Fangio defense. I actually like him at safety in this defense just because of he's going to be putting so many opportunities to make plays on the ball with the ball in front of him. I think he does that really, really well. I mean, he's got great burst. He has really good size. He's a good tackler. He sees the field exceptionally well. And I've watched him make so many plays, whether it be as a defensive back or a punt returner. When he has the ball in his hands, it's pretty dangerous. And I think at safety, you're going to get more of those opportunities for him to have some pick six potential. But I think you get him into rookie camp, you see how he moves. They might say, hey, we love that size as an outside corner, and we'll have two rookie corners next year. But personally, I think he would be a damn good free safety in the NFL.
I actually think he fits better than Blankenship. I like Blankenship's aggressiveness, but it appears that DeJean can cover a little better from that spot. So I would think that he immediately moves ahead of Blankenship with C.J. Gardner-Johnson at the other. All right, let's look at the third round draft pick. I know nothing about him. To educate our fan base here on what they're getting with Hunt from Houston Christian.
Let's say y'all aren't watching Houston Christian games on Saturday nights in Philly. Come on, what's going on?
I didn't watch a one. I got to be honest with you.
It's all right. He's the only player of theirs I watched as well. So, I mean, it's all about upside. You know what I mean? We used to call it a triangle. You know, it's height, length, speed. He has all the triangle numbers that you're looking for to where you believe that you can coach a player up and tap into those traits and develop, you know, pass rush moves, develop the strength. But he is incredibly raw. So I would say, like, this almost feels like a redshirt player where you draft him and you love the traits, you love the upside, and he's probably going to be on the 53 every week, but I don't know that he's going to play a whole lot. And I think that fits the model there. You know, if they've brought guys like Nolan Smith along slowly, but I look at this and say Bryce Huff is a stud. He's going to lock down one side. Josh Sweat is a stud. He's going to lock down the other. Hopefully Nolan is your third guy rotating in. And I would say Jalix is that dude that you're just trying to develop for the future. You know, that you hope you strike lightning here, where I think they did such a good job in the first two rounds of checking off needs. And they've done such a good job of extending young players where you kind of look at the board and say, man, I don't know that we have any true needs in the third round. If we can hit on this pass rusher with elite length and elite speed, that's a bargain. That's a steal, right? And so you're trying to do that, basically, as opposed to saying, here's how this guy factors in 2024. I think this is a 2025 type player.
You know, you mentioned a redshirt player. The last redshirt player they took, which makes me wary of this pick, was Davion Taylor. He was a redshirt, and then he was a redshirt, and then he was a redshirt, and then he was another redshirt, and it never worked out for him. But listen, it's okay. I'm fine with that. You never know how this stuff is going to work out. So let's look at the rest of the draft. Did they get anybody in your mind that really has the upside to be a really good player in this league, starting with the running back, Will Shipley?
Yeah, I like Will a lot. I mean, obviously Saquon's the dude. He's going to get the touches, but Will's ability in the passing game is really, really fun. I think another thing with this new kickoff rule. A guy like Will Shipley could have a pretty big impact back there. Same with Anaya Smith that they got in the fifth round. I look at both those dudes and say, you know, the kickoff is back. You have to have someone back there who can make someone miss and then has the speed to run away from them. It's almost like being an outside zone runner, the kickoff is now, or kick returner, excuse me. So I think Shipley and Smith are going to, have a potentially very, very big roles there. But, you know, Shipley could be the Kenny Gainwell replacement. I mean, he's not factoring in above Saquon. We know that. But, you know, getting him some touches in the screen game, spelling Saquon, there's going to be a lot of value there. I liked this draft all the way around. I think, you know, with Smith in the fifth, Johnny Wilson in the sixth, you're taking guys who have kind of an elite trait that they can hang their hat on. I talked about this on day three on the ESPN broadcast of when you're a late round pick, you want a trait that's on your business card that says, this is what I do. Anaya Smith, his trait is run after catchability. When the ball's in his hands, and he played some tailback in his career, played receiver, was a really good return man. When the ball's in his hands, he's electric. With Johnny Wilson, he's 6'8" almost at wide receiver. That is an elite trait. That's something that stands apart. And I know that this is something that the Eagles value in their scouting department is what is your calling card trait? Both those guys have those. So I think with all three of those offensive players from day three, they have a particular role and a particular skill set that could allow them to get on the field earlier, as opposed to, like, normally you would say, since the team was in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, day three draft picks, you're probably not making an impact. But I think each of those guys has a pathway to getting on the field.
All right, let's look at the linebacker that they selected. It's obviously a very sentimental selection. A lot of people in Philadelphia really appreciate it. Can Jeremiah Trotter be a linebacker in this day and age in the NFL where you really have to cover and where they don't really value a linebacker?
That's the thing, right? I mean, I love the sentimentality of it, but let's not overlook the fact that over the past 3 years in the ACC, he was one of the best football players in that conference, right? At a big-time program at Clemson. He wasn't just, you know, this wasn't a nepotism play in college football. He was a really, really good player. You could turn on games on Saturdays to see that. I think the question will be, yeah, can he play on third down? I'm not so sure of that. I think that's why he was available in the fifth round. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but he plays like a big guy. You know, 6'228", but he plays like he's 240. You know, everything's downhill. There's not a lot of great sideline to sideline movement. I think in some ways it's interesting because he's kind of like a N'Kobe Dean, you know, who they drafted in the third. Another undersized guy who loves to play with the ball in front of him. He's not going to give you a lot of run and chase outside the tackle. So, but we saw last year how important depth is at linebacker. So, you know, you look at linebacker's been devalued. man, I would say look at Kansas City and San Francisco. Their linebackers are pretty good. They were the last two teams standing last year. So you have to have linebackers, even if they've been devalued. I know y'all brought in Devin White, but I think there's a role for Trotter as maybe a third linebacker. I mean, the 4-3 is pretty much dead in this day and age, but I still think you got to have that depth, and you love to have young, inexpensive depth at these positions. So there is still good value for him there.
Yeah, could be a really good special teamer too. All right, Matt, we're talking to Matt Miller, ESPN draft analyst. Matt, last question is, now that your life has been hectic, obviously, over the last couple of months. So now, are you looking at players for next year already?
Yeah, so I have you up on one tab talking to you, and the tab next to it is my 2025 Google spreadsheet. So, yeah, I'm already looking at players for next year. It's funny, like, I know everybody's like, oh, like, our lives are very hectic over the spring, but I am probably addicted to this, and I get very bored very quickly. It's too cold in Missouri right now. It's like 80 degrees today. My pool isn't open yet. My kids are at school. Like, what else am I going to do? Might as well watch football, right? So I'm going to start watching some quarterbacks for next year and getting baseline notes on those guys down so that when September rolls around, you know, I already have that foundation to build on.
All right. I'm just curious to know, of the six quarterbacks that were taken, obviously not counting the first couple who we know are highly ranked, I don't know how these teams evaluate quarterbacks. Like Bo Nix, in your mind, is that a good selection? Is JJ McCarthy a good selection? Is Michael Penix a good selection? When you look at those guys, is it more desperation to have a quarterback or legit?
Oh, it's desperation. Absolutely. Now that doesn't mean they can't work out, right? I mean, it can still work out, but it is absolutely rooted in desperation because, you know, at the quarterback position right now, there's the haves and the have-nots. There's no middle market anymore. You know, I mean, look at the last 25 years have been dominated by two guys, Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. A couple other years, great teams won the Super Bowl. You could say the Giants teams, you know, with Eli, they had a great defensive line and got lucky with two crazy catches. The Eagles team that beat the Patriots, that was a damn good team, right? And a little bit of a team of destiny to some degree. The Rams, greatest defensive tackle of all time, right? But by and large, over the last 25 years, the Super Bowl has been won by two guys, you know, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. So I feel like you either have that guy or you don't. And because of that, teams are swinging wildly. You know, it's the bottom of the ninth and you got to hit a grand slam is how these teams are swinging right now. And so I think that's what we're seeing, you know, and yeah, Philly's in a great situation with Jalen, and now they're in that spot where, okay, we know what we have at quarterback. Let's build around him. And I think we're seeing if you don't have a guy who's a top five or six quarterback, what are you doing? You know, you got to either, you know, start over, which like we just saw Chicago do that. Justin Fields wasn't terrible, but they said, hey, he's never going to be what we need to win the NFC, the NFC East or the NFC in general. So you gotta restart basically. And I think that's what we're seeing so many teams like Washington do. Sam Howell, you gave him like 15 games. Like, nope, never mind. Let's move on and try this again. And we'll see the Giants do that next year. Right? They'll be 25. We're gonna be talking about the Giants taking a quarterback. So it's the middle market is absolutely dead at quarterback.
Matt, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for coming on. Continued success with your draft. Yeah, dominate your life. But I guess it's so much fun that you don't even look at it that way. It's not work. It's never work when we're in this business, right?
Absolutely not. It's all fun all the time.
It's the Mike Missanelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
All right, thank you to Matt Miller for his expertise on the Eagles draft. Let's just touch on the Phils. They're in the West Coast. We tend to forget about them when they're in the West Coast. Very few people stay up that late to watch them. And a lot of good NBA on last night, including Denver, eliminating the Lakers with a shot by Murray. He's fantastic. Jamal Murray's a really good player. In any event, the Phillies lost to the Angels last night on a very weird play, a wild pitch by Sir Anthony Dominguez, and then Garrett Stubbs, when he chased it down, threw wild to the covering Dominguez at the plate, and Mike Trout scored from second base, and that was the winning run for the Angels. Listen, the Phillies have been on a really pretty good run here, so I'm not going to complain about a loss last night. They've got a couple hitters emerging. Alec Baum is hit out of his mind. Trey Turner's been fantastic at the plate.
you still have some of the worries. You have a little bit of a Harper worry. You have a big Castellanos worry. I think Rojas has come back down to earth. But I just mentioned Sir Anthony Dominguez. They got a problem. Sir Anthony Dominguez is a high leverage reliever, is not delivering. His ERA is close to 10. He is not getting the job done. This may necessitate a move down to the minor leagues, but who would they bring up in that kind of a situation? These are high leverage innings. I don't believe they have a guy down there who they can count on in a high leverage situation. So that's going to push everybody up. Soto has been really up and down. Kirkering, by survival, is going to be the guy that's going to have to handle these Dominguez innings now if they have to send him to the minors or to keep him up. He's just not getting the job done, and they've got to do something about it. So you're talking about at the top, you're talking about Hoffman and Alvarado, and then the third guy that you count on high leverage right now has got to be Kirkering. There's really nobody else. So that is my worry for the Phillies. But like I say, they're playing pretty good baseball right now. That's a major worry. I don't worry about any of the rest of it. Their starting rotation has been fabulous. Their hitters have been good enough to carry the mail. All right. It is now time for Mike Unleashed on the program. Mike Unleashed has just a couple of newsy items here at the top. The ESPN Monday Night Countdown is going to get Jason Kelce. Oh, the bidding was coming in fast and furious, and he decided to take the job. I think that would be less taxing on him. Well, working one night a week, he can do whatever else he wants to do. He's going to be on the pregame with Scott Van Pelt and postgame. So we'll have Jason Kelce on TV finally with ESPN. He'll have to make that trek to Bristol, Connecticut. But, hey, you know, one day a week is not bad. You go up on Sunday, you stay in a lousy hotel in Bristol, Connecticut. You do all your prep work. You do the show, and then you sleep over again. And by Tuesday morning, you're back in Havertown or wherever he's living. All right, second item on the Mike Unleashed. You know, I've been crying for years about in my long career, my long distinguished journalistic career that entails newspapers and television, radio and podcasting and writing a children's book and writing a Penn State book and all that good stuff. I think I've had a pretty good career, but I have never been asked to be a commencement speaker. And it has always been my goal. And so I just looked at the list of commencement speakers for this year, the local schools around here. And we have some small local schools. I think that's where I would get my feet wet. Some smaller school here in the area would ask me to be a commencement speaker. They would get their money's worth. However, Cabrini College, their last commencement, as they join Villanova as a school, the commencement speaker is Kylie Kelce. Now, I don't want to say anything that it's a bad choice. She seems like a very pleasant lady. And, of course, the Kelces are in the news a lot. But if they're choosing Kylie Kelce over me, I'm going to announce that I'm going to retire my pursuit of being a command. That does it. That's the end for me. Community College takes Kylie Kelce, and I'm right in their neighborhood. And so that's a message to me that, Mike, it's over. You're never going to get to wear the robe. You're never going to get to have the hat on and the little doily thing around your neck. It's a sad day for me. I'm kind of broken up about it, but I think that was the Kylie Kelce put the final nail in my coffin. Darren, are you feeling my emotions here?
No, but I'm going to make you feel better. That's her alma mater. That's where she went to college, Cabrini.
She went to Cabrini?
Yeah.
Oh, she did?
She did. So, you know, that's a natural, because she's been in the news and whatever. That's a natural choice for this time of year.
Okay.
Feel better now? Feel a little better?
No, not really.
Nah, come on. You feel a little better. A little better.
It doesn't make me feel better at all. It makes me feel that it's over. So, all right. Joel Embiid had some comments to say about the fans. Now, if you read the comments just on their face, you'd say, well, that's pretty obnoxious for him to say. Why does he care about the fans at that point? But he was asked the question. So if you're asked the question, you have to, the thoughts have to go through your head. Should I even answer this? My thing is, no, you shouldn't answer it. You should say, well, whatever that was, that has really no bearing on how we should have played. Instead, he went the other way and said he likes our fans, but he was ashamed that that happened. What happens is that Sixer fans look at the New York money. The Knicks fans support their team a lot. They're willing to pay big dollar. So if you're a season ticket holder, and a lot of season ticket holders for the Sixers, you go, oh, really? Well, my $120 ticket, they're going to pay what for it? They're going to give me $700 for that? Hey, listen. In a perfect world, you'd like to say, you know, there's no price that I'm going to sell my ticket for. I'm going to support my team. But when New York money comes in, you go, you know, I'm never going to get a chance like this again. It's the second, you know, it's the third and fourth games. They'll continue the series. I'll get game six or whatever. And so you sell it. I can't criticize fans for selling their ticket when big money's at stake. Now, if you sell it for just a little bit above face value, I think you're a fraud. But if they're going to pay you 500% on the price that you paid, you got to think about it. So I'm not going to fault the Sixer fans. But when it comes to Embiid, and when you don't score a field goal in the fourth quarter, you only score 1 point, you can't say anything. You can't even address that. That should be irrelevant to you, and that's the way you should answer it. You can't complain about the fans when the whole game turned on you not being there in the fourth quarter. It's self-awareness. You got to go, you know, I didn't notice that, or I don't want to answer that, or whatever. But you can't answer it and then blame the fans. My God, are you kidding me? They're blaming you for losing the game. You're going to turn around and blame the fans? What did they have to do with your performance? All right. Let's close out with a basketball note. You know, the pregame shows on TNT for the NBA playoffs and the postgame shows are just it's must-watch TV. Not because of the great basketball analysis you're going to get, but because of the dynamic and the blend of personalities of Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal. And when they get off topic about stuff, Shaquille O'Neal's laugh alone makes it a great TV moment, because we're talking about Charles Barkley telling a story about him being in a sauna or a steam bath and him remarking to a guy who was in the sauna or steam bath about a bracelet. I like a bracelet. And then later on, the guy said, oh, it's Charles Barkley. I'll give him the bracelet. And he tells the story. So I'll let Charles tell the story. Ernie kind of prompting him. Kenny Smith and Shaquille adding wood to the fire with their laughter and their preposterous questions about it. Here it is.
Like, who made your bracelet? That looks like a great aggression.
You know, I got this bracelet from a guy in the steam room back in Arizona.
You got what? Time
out. Hey, Kenny, quit asking questions,
you
man.
Got the bracelet from a dude guy in the steam room. Explain, please. Please no, explain.
I saw this guy wear this in the steam room, and I noticed the dark.
So what, did you ask
Are
him for
it? Are you kidding me?
And I did. We were talking. I said, that's a nice bracelet. And I said, I had never seen it before. And I asked him. I didn't ask him for it. So we get out of the steam room. We get dressed. He comes over. He said, man, you can have the bracelet.
That's Wait, I had a question. Were towels on or off in the
towels steam
room?
Towels were on.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Towels were on.
Okay. Hey. Y'all, get out. Yo, he got me up. He's like, ask him about the bracelet.
So, wait, you
so I didn't know the story. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Y'all haters,
that's your
man.
Problem, man. You waste
hey, man, whatever your name
you
is.
Just say, hey, look,
I don't even know his name.
I don't know his name.
And he gave you a bracelet in the steam room as he was rubbing oil on your back.
So
you don't
empty.
Even know his name. Oh, man. The guy's rubbing oil on your
no,
back.
He wasn't rubbing oil on
his back. He gave you a bracelet.
He was rubbing all over his back, man. Hey, man, whatever your name is, thank you for my bracelet. Thank you.
All right. I mean, Shaq's laughter, it's just, you know, think about it. Is it that funny? No, it's not that funny, but the dynamic of those guys makes it a hysterical story. So I always look forward to those kind of stories. And then in that, we didn't have that. Obviously, you can't see it, but the people who do the social media memes are brilliant, because then they attached Charles's head to a photo of the body of Fat Bastard from Austin Powers in a sauna.
Oh, it's just incredible, funny stuff. All right, that's going to be the end of the Mike Mussinelli podcast today. I've gone away for a couple of weeks, so I'll be doing a podcast from on the road, especially if the Sixers continue this series. We'll follow every game, continue to follow it. Again, you can reach me, email mike@mikemiss.com. Check out my website, mikemiss.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at MikeMiss25. If you're headed down the shore, beautiful weather this weekend, get down in Tally Vineyards for a little wine action. It's a vineyard I have part ownership in. I love it. And your lawn, a natural lawn. Don't go anywhere else but natural lawn. My lawn, I had to mow it because I'm going away for a couple of weeks. It just looked, I want to take a picture of it and post it. It's just so, I love a beautiful lawn. I don't know what it is about my genes, but I love a nice green lawn where it's coming up healthy and stuff. And that's because of the great people at Natural Lawn. Darren, anything else? Did we forget anything else? Don't forget that first basket of the day bet on Bet Rivers, where if you can get a profit boost up to 100% if you bet who is going to score the first basket of tonight's Sixers-Knicks game. Just go to the Bet Rivers app. It's a fantastic app that you should have on your phone. We good? Everything good?
Yeah, depending on your golf schedule, we will try and get a reaction in after tonight's game at some point tonight or tomorrow.
Well, we're not going to do it tonight because I'll be on the road.
Yeah, you'll be on the road tonight, but we'll get a reaction at some point.
Sometime tomorrow, and I don't even know what time I'm getting in. But anyway, I won't be playing golf till Friday anyway. So
there you go.
All right, we good?
We're good.
I think we're good. Everybody have a great rest of the day, and look forward to the warm weather. Get outdoors. For Darren, I'm Mike Mussinelli. It's the Mike Mussinelli Podcast. Tell your friends and neighbors to subscribe for free, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Mussinelli Podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.